How's it going, guys? And welcome back to the Paper Courts Podcast. I appreciate you joining me here again as I continue to be as inconsistent as I possibly can. That's sort of been the theme with the podcast. Still sort of deciding how best to do it. I was looking at the dates, and it looks like once per month has been sort of the schedule. Hopefully with the off season now, I'll have a little bit more time on my hands, a little bit less playing and a little bit more writing and podcasting as I get this book together. Got a really fun one today with Tim Hovland, who is probably the most candid interviewee I've ever had. I guess that's a good way of putting it. He was awesome. He was a lot of fun, and he's still a little bit bitter over Phil Dahlhauser calling him out at the Manhattan Beach Open. Dahlhauser, as you know, won his sixth Manhattan Beach Open title with Nick Lucena this weekend, beating Sean Rosenthal and Trevor Crabb. Trevor, you are going to get a win at some point. It's going to happen, but for now, keep entertaining us as the villain. But yet, Dahlhauser, the first thing he did was call out the Hov and said, you know what, that's six, and Hovland, who has won five. So Dahlhauser has surpassed him. But enjoy my conversation with Tim Hovland. He's one of the greats, one of the legends, and it was a ton of fun getting to talk to him.
You grew up in the Southern California area, right?
I grew up in Playa Del Rey, and grew up at a beach club, and that's where I started playing volleyball. And it was just, you know, what's the Southern California lifestyle? Beach volleyball and surfing and doing the whole nine yards. And I played all the sports, but I always liked volleyball the most.
I remember, because I've been digging through the LA Times archives, and you were named the Southern California Athlete of the Year over Ronnie Lott, right?
Yeah. Yeah, that was a good day.
You must have played.
Ronnie still pissed this day. We went to SC together, and I wouldn't let him forget it. And now I see him all the time because his daughter plays volleyball. He's still mad about it.
That's funny. You must have played a lot more than volleyball then, growing up.
No, I was all-city football, all-city basketball, and volleyball.
Okay, you are an above-average athlete. What did you play? Go on to play at SC?
I went out. I got a full ride on a volleyball scholarship, but I went out, and when I got back from, I was in Brazil on the junior national team, and I got back, and I went to a couple practices, and I saw Ronnie Lott hit this guy, knocked him into fucking next week, and I decided, you know what, maybe I'll just play volleyball. It sure seems like there's a bunch of more chicks, and then you don't have to break your goddamn, get broken in half out here. So that's when I decided to stay with volleyball.
Okay. I guess health-wise, definitely not the worst decision, but, I mean, financially, it's not like the AVP. AVP wasn't even up and running yet by that point.
You know what, though? The timing was perfect. My timing was, well, you know, because I was playing indoor also, so I would go.
Okay.
I would get done. When we got done, I would go to Italy, making a couple hundred thousand over there. And then I'd come over here, and we had sponsorship that paid $200,000 to $250,000 before you stepped on the court.
Holy cow. I didn't realize it was that.
We were making big money back in the 80s.
Yeah.
I mean, the sponsorships were so much more than the prize money. It was unbelievable.
Yeah, that's right. I didn't know that the sponsors were doling out that much cash. That's wild. Who were you sponsored by?
I was sponsored by Offshore. I was the first guy. I designed the Oakley eyewear back in the day, and they were paying big money back then. And then I had Power Shoes. And then we were sponsored by Dos Equis Beer and then Miller Lite. You know, then they bought us out of that contract.
Right. Okay.
We're on TV every week.
That's crazy.
People watched it religiously. It was the hot thing of the 80s. That's for damn sure.
It's funny to hear that contrast, you know, a day after Manhattan where everyone's so excited, you know, they'd volleyball's on for an hour and a half, you know, maybe eight weekends out of the whole year.
This was every weekend. 3 hours on Monday. They'd do it live or they'd do it on Monday. So So you didn't know, nobody knew about it. So you had parties, and you'd have a beach volleyball party, and they watch the Open from Del Mar or Florida or some other place.
Yeah,
that's wild. Good times.
So take me through those early days. So I know that the ABP was founded in '83. The first full season was '84. And that, Event Concepts and David Wilk and those guys were running the pro scene up to that point. I guess, when did you start to get more involved in the beach scene and less involved in the indoor side of things?
I played indoor in Italy until 1989, but it didn't conflict. I was always over there right after the last tournament and back here right before the first tournament. But, the MVP, we went on strike with Leonard, and then then everything started going good, and it flourished the first 10 years, and in the 90s it went a little sideways. So, and there's all kinds of different reasons, but you can pick one out of the air. There's a bunch of them,
right? And I know that like you said, it was flourishing, and then in 1990 Leonard went to he made a move to have ownership stake in it. And that didn't seem to go very well. I guess, were you involved in...
No. You know what? There was somebody... Yeah, everybody got a little too greedy. And, everything went sideways after that. And you know what? You can't... Miller Lite was the greatest sponsor ever.
Yeah.
Once they walked away, everything was in trouble.
And that was in... Was that 96 when Miller and Cuervo both kind of stepped out at the same time?
I thought it was 95, 94. I don't know, something like that.
Okay.
Yeah, they really cut it back. Cuervo was first out, and then Miller jumped out too.
Okay. And I just pulled up your BVB, and it's crazy to look at it. So in 81 was the first year you made money playing beach volleyball, or at least first year you made professional documented money, $225. And then 7 years later, in '88, it was $142,000. That's incredible, that growth right there.
That's how fast it grew, though. I mean, we were doing seven or eight tournaments up and down the California coast. One year we did 30 tournaments all around in the wintertime, too. I have 25, a shitload.
Yeah, that's crazy. And I know that the lifestyle of the game is obviously much different now than it was back then. And I know that just from all the stories that I've read, because I've kind of been digging through the LA Times archives, that you definitely lived it up back in the day.
But you know what?
What was the lifestyle just like? I mean,
you know what? We were groundbreakers. We were doing whatever the hell we wanted to do. But we were in the best shape of anybody. So we play and work out. We played hard. We partied hard. And, yeah, it was on. It was hard living. But it was goddamn fun. I'll tell you that.
I bet it was. And
yeah,
I mean,
it was.
Because I was talking with David Wilk, and I remember you said that you liked that guy, and he said that they would just have these huge just vats of what they call the Cuervo spike, which is basically just Cuervo mixed with an energy drink, and you couldn't really taste it, so people were just going crazy off that stuff.
David Wilk, oh my God. Poodlehead. Nickname his ass Poodlehead. That's funny. Yeah, those stories can go on forever, buddy.
Oh, I bet.
So and good, though.
With 83, now that, I mean, you seem to like Wilking and kind of, teasing with the poodle head kind of thing, but I know that a lot of players were not the biggest fans of Event Concepts. How involved were you with kind of the protest, or were you just kind of going along with the flow because you had a bigger thing going on in Italy overseas anyway? So was that a huge matter of concern for you, or were you
No, you know what? It takes two to play.
Right.
And what we did was right. And what they should have done was open the books up and work with us. They didn't. And that was the fallout. So, Yeah, I mean, everybody's on the same page. And, you know, and back then, the AVP, you had to work together. Everybody together or it wasn't going to work. So, you know, as much as we hate each other, we still work together.
Right. And your BVB list of partners is pretty funny because, like, nowadays you look at someone's BVB list and the partners go dozens and dozens deep. You and Mike Dawson started playing together right away, and that was pretty much just a pretty steady relationship throughout almost the entirety of your guys' career through, what, 1990. What made you and Dodd so good? Because, I mean, from when you started to when you guys broke up, I mean, it was you and Dodd and Sinjin and Randy. And Karch and whoever he really grabbed. So what made you and Dodd so good?
You know why? Because we showed up. We worked hard at it. We were in, you know, we play all day. These guys now come down for 2 hours and do a couple training things. We'd get down there at 10 in the morning. We'd play on our orange court at Marine. We wouldn't lose a game all day. We'd take pride in beating everybody down there. And everybody would come to us to play us. And we play 7 hours of volleyball, you know, hard games, and that was just normal. Because if you did that, you'd have to play 7 or 8 hours on a Sunday to win an open. And these guys weren't in that kind of shape, even though we were going out and running around. But we were in great shape. And we're bigger, faster, stronger than most of the guys out there anyway.
Right.
So they were a little bit more afraid of us. They weren't ready. And we played a lot of volleyball, my friend. So,
it sounds like it. So was that just kind of the standard day? Was just get out there at 10, lock down your court at Marine Street, play all day, and then just hang out at night?
Yeah. Well, yeah. That was your basic. They play to like 2 o'clock, go get some lunch, and maybe come back and play a little bit more, and then barbecue, go hang out, do whatever we wanted to do. And then, you know, because our weekends, our party nights were Sunday night and Monday night. Because, well, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, we were doing things. So
right.
It was an interesting lifestyle.
Yeah. That doesn't sound like the worst way to go about it.
Oh, no. That was the top tip tops, man. Tip tops.
And two, so, I mean, your big rivals were obviously Sinjin and Randy. And they did their fair share amount of winning as well. So when you look at them, what made them a pretty formidable team?
Stokey's 6'5". He had perfect hands. He beat the shit out of the ball. Sinjin worked harder than anybody else around and couldn't, never cramped. None of those four guys ever cramped. And we played 10 hours of volleyball some of those days.
Yeah.
And you know what? Nobody wanted to lose that game. We always call ourselves the big game hunters. Because we win Manhattan, Hermosa, the Cuervos. We give them the Rhode Islands and the Phoenixes and those kind of things.
Right.
So we had a lot of finals together. That's for damn sure.
Yeah. And speaking of the big game, I know that you were out at Manhattan this weekend. And that seemed, I mean, since the very first Manhattan Beach Open in 1960, I mean, everyone has always seemed to say that Manhattan is the best tournament. It's the best tournament, I mean, even compared to Hermosa or, you know, now Huntington's a popular one now. But what makes Manhattan so special?
Manhattan has been dubbed the Wimbledon of beach volleyball.
Right.
And it really is. That's the first place I saw Von Hagen. Back when I was riding my bike down there, probably at 12 or 13, and it was a show. This is our backyard too. This is where we live, you know. So you gotta win your home games, you know. Plus you have all your girlfriends and friends, and you know everything's down there. But you've got to win Manhattan. If you could be the best, you're a great player. But if you don't win Manhattan, You haven't lived yet.
And you won your first one pretty early, right?
I won 5 in a row there, yeah.
Yeah, I mean.
Yeah, 1980 or 19, I don't know what year it was, 1981.
Something like that.
When you, like you said, if you haven't won Manhattan, you know, if you haven't lived, you haven't really had a full beach volleyball career, and you get it pretty early. What was it like? Because, I mean, I know that that kind of had a little bit of nostalgic effect for you, having, you know, riding your bike down to see Von Hagen and probably Ronnie Lang playing when you were 12 or 13.
You know what? You're in the club now. It's like the, you know, it's the you've won Wimbledon. You know, it's the big one. You know, if you don't win it, you can't be one of the best. That's just the way it is. And, you know, as I was yelling at Gelhausen yesterday, he got his 6-1 yesterday. I was talking to a guy he could beat yesterday. And he made sure he told me afterwards that he won it. I'm more pissed out about that.
You were a big Trevor Crabb fan yesterday, then, huh?
I love Rosie. Rosie's a great kid.
Yeah.
And Trevor's a good guy, too. I don't really know him that well.
Man, they almost did it. Rosie played insane.
He played really, really good. Best he's played in a long time.
That was a good final.
Yeah, it was. It was fantastic. Good crowd.
Does it ever get old to walk down the pier and to see your name cemented in there, what, 5-6 times?
You know what's even funnier? Is I was sitting with OB, Sinjin, Randy, Mike Dodd. All those people still remember us more than even know these guys now.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, it was we took more pictures and signed more autographs yesterday. It's kind of funny. Did you get these people that, hey, I met my wife at 1983 Manhattan Open. Remember that one? No, I don't, but I was playing, you know. It's pretty funny how these – a lot of old-time memories there, that's for damn sure.
Yeah. And, I mean, through that, I mean, you just mentioned, like, some of beach volleyball's all-time greats. And throughout pretty much the entire 80s, in every final or semifinal was either – you know, you and Dodd and Sinjin and Randy, or you and Dodd and Karch and Frohoff, or whoever he was partnered with.
You know what?
That this was like later in the scene, but.
Yeah. Well, there's, we've won Manhattan 5 times, and I've got second 6 times. Six times. So that's a lot of finals. But you got to get to the finals to win, and you only win 50% of your finals. That's the truth.
What was it like just throughout the years just to be at that level of dominance for almost an entire decade? I mean, and that goes for all you guys. I mean, when you entered the tournament, I mean, did you pretty much know that the first couple rounds were just – it was just a matter of time until you were back to the finals? I mean, because that – I mean, in any sport, that's kind of an insane level of success to sustain.
Well, you know what? It's kind of like the old Boston Celtics, Los Angeles Lakers. You know what? You were going to get through these other guys. They might get you once in a while, but very, very rarely. And if they did, then we got in the loser's bracket, and then you start playing better and better because the more games you play, the better you get. And you're not going to get tired. So we just had more determination. And you know what? We worked harder. That's the damn truth.
Yeah. And then in the late 80s, I know that Sinjin was kind of making a push to take the game international. And I know that that's sort of when a fair amount of friction started to happen between the FIVB and the AVP and how the Olympics were going to go. What were your thoughts when kind of the international, the FIVB, was sort of presented as an option?
They didn't want anything to do with this 5 years before that. All of a sudden they saw the popularity of it, and now they're trying to take it over. And you know what? We had a little bit of friction back and forth. And you know what? Now that they've changed the game so that the short court and the Euro trash can actually play with the Americans now, because they never beat us a game before that. Me and Don or Sinjin Randy won all those tournaments. And then they changed the game. I don't like the game the way it is now. I think guys are bigger and strong, and they'd be playing on a normal size court. But that was the FIVB trying to get their players on the equal balance, you know.
Right.
I don't have much good to say about them, to tell you the truth.
Yeah. And I know that when at the it was determined that 96 was going to be was going to welcome in beach volleyball for its first Olympic Games, that the qualification process, how that was going to happen, was a very big deal between having a trial and having the international tour, you know, have the top couple of teams be that tight end. I have a feeling that you were more in favor of the qualifier, the trials in Baltimore, than FIVB rankings.
Exactly. I mean, all of a sudden we're down there to have to listen to these guys. We're in charge of everything, you know, and all of a sudden they're starting to make headways in, you know, I don't know. It was a weird time. I was about, you know, I was right at the end of my career, and my neck was all screwed up, so, you know, shit happens.
Right. And were you on the board, the AVP Players Board, when, because I know that Tinjin and Randy were fined no small amount of money for playing overseas rather than the AVP. I didn't know if you were part of that decision-making process.
Oh, you know, no, I was not part of that, but we played a bunch overseas, too. You know, I mean,
right.
they would pay nice appearance fees and things like that. And, you know, I don't know. It's what it is. Wasn't that good either way.
Right. And when Kent Steffes kind of came onto the scene, I know that you played a little bit with him when he was really first coming out there.
The only thing that happened, Mike Dodd hurt his back, and we weren't getting the finishes we were, and I picked up Kent. I think we made 10 or 12 finals. We won 5 or 6 tournaments. He's a stud. I mean, he's 10 years younger than me. And, he's a hell of a player.
What was he like when he first started coming out? Because I know that just from everything I've read, I read a couple of Sports Illustrated pieces on him back in the early 90s, and it doesn't seem like Kent was out there really to make friends. He was out there to win some ball games.
He wasn't well liked. Still isn't well liked. I get along with him pretty good. I mean, when you're winning, that cures a lot of things. And he was very businesslike. He got his work in. He was a good athlete, and he wasn't a real team player. Let's say that.
Right. He was out there to get his reps in and pick up a couple wins, and call it a day.
Yeah, he was. He wasn't out there to make friends. That's for sure.
Now, I know that by the time that the Olympics rolled around, that you had kind of called it a career, pretty much. When did you try at all to qualify for the Olympics, or I know you mentioned that your neck was bothering you, or was that kind of out of the picture?
Nah, you know what? My neck was screwed up back then, so I think I stopped playing like 95, 96. You gotta be healthy to be playing that game.
Yeah. Yeah, it seemed that, you know, you guys presented a pretty united front, you know, at that protest in 83-84, when did there start to be a bit of a divide between certain players? I mean, obviously you guys were competitors, so on the court, you know, it doesn't have to be lovey-dovey, but it seemed that there was a little bit of some fracturing going on in the sport kind of in the mid to late 90s.
Tinjin started going with Ruben Acosta and the FIVB. Tinjin thought he saw greener pastures, but he really didn't.
Greener pastures being the FIVB game?
Right. Yeah, the whole nine yards. So, Randy didn't want to go there. Nobody else was going to go there. So, he picked up Hank Holton. And, you know, listen, it wasn't easy traveling around the goddamn world and playing in shitty volleyball tournaments. So be it.
Right. And do you think that kind of – I talked to Adam Johnson about it, and he said as soon as the FIVB became the qualification process for the Olympics as opposed to kind of the Olympic trial system that pretty much every other sport in the world has, that was sort of not the death of the AVP, but it would always be second rate because players now have all the incentive in the world to go over to the FIVB to play because that's how you have to qualify for beach volleyball's biggest event.
You know what? I'm not that sold on the biggest event. I liked it the way it was before that. Once you brought that in, you know what? It didn't really do anything for beach volleyball. If you can see, 96 we won it at the Olympics. Nobody gives a fuck. It's done. You know, it was stronger without the damn Olympics.
It's a good way to look at it, and it's definitely stronger over here.
Definitely stronger. And the game was better. And I don't know why, you know, believe me. I don't know.
And so when you got out of the game in like about 95 was really your last full season, what did you start getting into?
I did the announcing for a couple years, and I got right into real estate. I'm still in real estate. I'm with Beach City Brokers out of South Bay, and I buy and sell apartments and houses and flips, and I own apartments, and I just raised my kids, my friend.
All right. Not a bad racket. How many kids do you have?
I got Tara Blues, 29, Hunter, 26, and Kiara is 18. And I have a grandson who's 14 months, Blake.
Oh, wow. Congratulations.
And oh, yeah. It's fantastic.
And do you have they all volleyball players?
Yeah, they all play. Actually, yep. My youngest one just flew to New York. She's modeling with Ford Agency now.
Oh, all
right. Hunter played at El Segundo. We won the CIF. I coached him with Ingenio. And, yeah, Tara played with – she played at San Diego State for a year. Yeah, it's all good. It's a good lifestyle.
All right. See, I mean, you've seen beach volleyball through pretty much every phase that it has been through, from before there was money in it, when there was just money starting to the protests, founding the AVP. AVP's gone up and down throughout the years, and now we are where we are now. Where do you see beach volleyball going? Do you think that it can claim its former glory at all, or is it just kind of maintain the pace of that, you know, being a big event here and there, popping in on TV on a random Sunday afternoon?
I think that the game is interesting. I don't like the short course. You know, is sex appeal there? Yeah, it's there. You know, I think it's getting better. I think that it's a little, you know, I think that what the people liked before was there's so many characters, you know, yelling at each other, doing this, doing that. You know, it's a little too scripted for me right now. I'd like to see it loosen up a little bit. And, you know, but that's just me. I'm old school. You know, we had a good turnout this weekend down there, and I think it's going in the right direction. Is it ever going to be like it used to be? I don't know. I mean, we had down in Hermosa back in, there's a picture I got from 92. That there's got to be 30,000 people down there.
Yeah.
Four big beach screens. I mean, this thing was jumping. I mean, they had 5,000 people down there yesterday, and it was nice. But when you're having 30,000 people, and you're live on NBC, you know, I don't know if you're going to – are we going to get back there? I don't know.
Right.
Bring back the bikini contest. Maybe that will help.
I've heard that those, a lot of those attracted a bigger crowd than some of the matches did.
Dude, it was insane. So good. So good. And then, yeah, it was a lifestyle. It was a lot of fun.
And that's what, you know, all the more old school guys that I talk to, that's really the first word that they use to describe the sport. It was almost, I mean, beach volleyball was obviously a big factor, but it was the lifestyle that came with it that seemed to be the biggest attraction to playing beach volleyball. And I feel like now it's almost the reverse in a way, and that lifestyle has sort of died out. And like you said, it's a little bit more professional.
Yeah,
guys will train for like 2 hours, that sort of thing.
Exactly. I'm glad I grew up at the time I grew up and went through it then, because it was a lot more pure than it is today. I don't know. If they don't have the same lifestyle that, or the same passion that the players had back then. And I don't know. You know, we learned it from Mingus and Von Hagen, and then, you know, Halvin Dodd and Smith and Stokey, and then you got these other guys like Kent and Adam Johnson, where they were not team players, so maybe everybody kind of just split up on their own.
Yeah, what do you mean? I guess, what do you mean by not team players? Because I know that Kent was sort of one of the first guys who really ushered in the era of not playing from, you know, 10 a.m. to 7 p.m.
No, Kent put his time in. That's not it. Just being all around, you know, going, you know, you got to sacrifice. You don't win it. You know, if me and Dodd win Hermosa, or we win a Cuervo, you go to the Cuervo parties. You don't fucking play and then win a tournament and get on a plane and leave. That's going to be the death of a sport.
Right.
You know, and that was Karch, that was Kent, that was Adam Johnson. You know, Sinjin, Randy, myself, Dodd, we carried the sport for years. We carried the sponsors for years because we took care of the sponsors. They loved us. We'd go do whatever they wanted to do, promotions here and there. You know, that was just part of our job. But these other guys would show up, win a tournament or whatever, and then pick up. That was a big part of this thing going down the tube, too.
Right. What were, because I know that from when I talked to Sinjin about it, he mentioned just a lot of what you said, and that, like, so much of it was just promoting the sport and the tournament and just sort of putting yourself out there instead of, like you just mentioned, just getting on a plane and going home. So what kinds of stuff were you guys doing to promote the sport? Because I feel like not many of the players do much of that today anymore anyway.
Well, shit. We would fly in on Thursday. We'd go to 4 or 5 different beach volleyball bars in Cleveland, Ohio. And, I swear to God. Or a place like Louisville, Kentucky. They have these volleyball bars that go crazy. Or we go to Florida, these bars, you know, all this stuff with Miller Lite. And that was the target audience from 21 to 40. And that's where they all show up. But we were out there running our, you know, drinking Miller Lite and playing beach volleyball.
Yeah. That's not a bad way to do it.
No. Good one. Good one.
What do you think about the implementation of the women's college game? Do you think that's going
to
do?
I think it's great. I think it's, you know, it's good for them. It's Title IX really working in their favor.
Yeah. Better for the women than the guys, that's for sure.
It is. You know, I don't know if we should ever pick the women up. We should have kept it like the PGA and the LPGA.
You think they should have kept it separate?
Oh, yeah. I would have.
How come? I'm curious as to the reasoning behind it.
Just another mistake in a long line of mistakes.
Because it seemed that when the women were integrated, the timing of that seemed to work out pretty well. Because as soon as Armada brings women under the same umbrella as AVP, here come Kerry Walsh and Misty May, who become the, you know, the biggest names in the sport at the time.
What? You know what? That's fine. We'll put them on their own tour. I don't know, buddy. I don't know about that.
Yeah.
That's the old Hobbs speaking when I was playing.
Right.
Now who knows?
And so was there a female presence really at all until, I mean, I know the WPBA popped in around like 96 or so. I mean, was there, what were the women doing back in the old school days?
They have their own tournaments. They have their own stuff. They didn't.
Yeah.
They're riding on our coattails. And then we go out and pick them up. You know.
Right.
I got nothing good to say. I won't say nothing.
But what do you think of Manhattan this weekend? I mean, from you go every year.
I thought it was fantastic. The setup was the best it's ever been. I think they did a hell of a job. I think it's going in a good direction. Things take time. You know what? You've got to win people over. You've got to get out there. I mean, I thought the setup was great. I thought the play was great. So it's a step in the right direction.
It's good to hear.
I hope so.
Yeah.
Appreciate Tim Hovland joining me here on the Paper Courts podcast. Good luck to all the boys and girls heading out to Chicago. I will not be going to Chicago since it is college football season and my real job now demands that I put in more than a couple hours a week and go play beach volleyball. So good luck to everybody out there. I will be keeping up with the writing for Volleyball Mag, Dig Magazine, and PaperCourts.com. And I will catch you all later. Thanks for listening.